Equipping the saints with sound biblical instruction. This is K-Wave 107.9.
Here we are. Hello. Welcome to Pastor's Perspective, sponsored by Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. My name is Brian Perez, and we are here live on this April 4th, 2024. Give us a call at 888-564-6173, 888-564-6173. Answering your questions today, we've got Phil Metzger from Calvary San Diego. He's joining us via Skype. Bobby Conway will be on the Bobby Cam in just a little bit. And here in the studio with me is Richard Cimino, one of the assistant pastors at Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. Richard is sitting in for Brian Broderson today because Pastor Brian knows that the secret to a happy life is a happy wife. So today is Cheryl's birthday, so he decided to not hang out with us today. Smart man, that Brian Broderson. But Phil, good to have you here. Or Phil, good to have you there. Richard, good to have you here in the studio. How's it going, everybody?
Good to be here, guys. Good to see y'all.
Great to see you guys.
And Bobby has arrived. Hello, Bobby.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Yeah, doing well. We're ready to answer some Bible questions at 888-564-6173. You can also send them in online on Facebook Messenger, the Pastor's Perspective page, or by filling out the form on our flagship radio station's website, kwave.com. But we prefer to hear the sound of your voice. We prefer to talk to you. So give us a call if you can at 888-564-6173. So let's begin with one of those questions that was sent in online. This one is from Danny. And Danny lives in Murrieta, California. And the question is, I get a little confused when it comes to the Trinity. I was just wondering if God felt Jesus's pain on the cross. Phil Metzger, we'll start with you. What do you say to Danny?
Oh, wow. That's an interesting. I don't think I've heard that one when you talk about the Trinity. So thanks for asking it. That's fun. It's a great question. I'm going to say no, and I'm going to say no for a reason. One, you know, three persons, one, but three persons. So Jesus took upon himself. He had a body. He allowed himself to be clothed in humanity, right? And so as such, he experienced a physical kind of a pain. So to the point of the person asking the question, he experienced something that the Spirit did not experience and that the Father did not experience. Though they are one and they share one, there is the uniqueness there. I would also remind you that at the same time that the Son was giving his life, the Father, for God so loved the world that he gave his only Son. So there's the pain of a father letting his son go through this. And though it was, you know, so they each had their own pain, I would suggest. And it would be too trivial to say, oh, it was all exactly the same because they're a Trinity. I would suggest three different expressions of pain over the loss and the suffering, but unique to each person.
Sounds good. Danny, thank you for sending in that question on Facebook Messenger. And Tiffany sent in a question the same way. She writes, I attend a church that doesn't talk about the tribulation and only does communion twice a year. Is that something I should be worried about, or is that just something minor? What do you think, Bobby Conway?
Yeah, well, different churches handle this differently as it relates to communion. I do think that it should be something that we look at doing more than twice a year. I see in churches sometimes, you know, you have the opportunity to take it every week at our church, but it's not something that we do collectively every week. At times, I desire to do that. I think it's such a sweet opportunity to be able to take communion together to remember the gospel, because that's what we're doing when we take communion, is remembering the gospel. And so I think that if people do that a couple times a year, a lot of churches that I went to early on as a Christian, that's kind of how they seem to do it. You know, your Christmas service, your Easter service. So I don't know, people that grow up in traditions where they do it weekly, and then they come into like a non-denominational Bible church that doesn't do it often, that can be a real hang up for people wanting to take communion more frequently. So I think that the the thing is as long as the church believes in the gospel, we don't have a certain amount of times that we're supposed to do it. It says as often as you do it, but hopefully we can figure out a way to provide it. And so perhaps sometimes, even if you're in a church where they don't do it as much as you'd like, you could ask if it could be provided in the back. Like we have that where the beginning of the service, a host says, hey, if you would like to take communion to representing that Jesus shed his blood for us, the elements are in the back. Feel free at your own time to go and just have a moment with the Lord.
Richard Cimino.
Yes, Bobby, and you just did hit on that one verse that I was going to bring up in 1 Corinthians 11:26. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. And in a broad sense, you would think that we would like to do that often, to proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. But it doesn't say, it doesn't give any quantitative what does often mean. Yeah. I read the word often and I think, well, that means frequently. But he's saying as often.
More than twice a year.
Yeah, as often. So I think it'd be a reasonable thing to just go ask the question, why? Can you just give me your explanation? I'm not here with an axe to grind. I would just like to know, what is your thought? Why do you design the liturgy of our church to only do this on two occasions throughout the course of the year? Mm-hmm. And just get your, and if the answer doesn't satisfy you, then maybe that's an option to kind of go like, that just made not enough sense for me to think like this is where I want to be hanging out. But I think it's so amazing that we even get to proclaim the Lord's death when we take communion. Mm. So anyway.
Phil Metzger.
Good stuff. I wanted to maybe talk about the first part. They said, you know, the church only talks about doesn't talk about the tribulation. So maybe I could speak to that. I think the guys did a great job on communion. That was cool. I actually have a question about that I'd like to ask. I could call in, but maybe I could just ask it.
We do have one open line right now. You can call in, Phil, quick. 888-564-6173.
But you have to take your headphones off first.
Yes.
Perfect. Yeah, exactly. I'll mute on this and then jump over.
Yes.
My statement was going to be this. You know, it depends on what kind of church you're in. Again, you know, in terms of how they teach, is it expositional? Is it a verse by verse? You know, they go through books of the Bible. Is it a topical, you know, kind of generated, you know, schedule? When you talk about like, you know, they don't talk about the tribulation, keep in mind, like, again, depending on the kind of church, your church may not be talking about that simply because it's not where they are in the scriptures. And so, but depending on where we are in the scriptures is really going to dictate what we're talking about. Now, events change that. Special moments change that. We all just celebrated Easter. It was an appropriate thing to pause from whatever else we were teaching. You know, I'm in the book of Revelation in the chapter about Babylon. It did not seem appropriate to teach that on Easter morning. So I took a pause and we talked about Easter. So, you know, but when I finish the book of Revelation, I won't talk about tribulation again for a long, long time. It just isn't. It's not because I don't believe it. It's not because I don't think it's there's end times are valid. I believe they are valid. However, I'm just going to be where I'm at. So when I get to a gospel, I'm going to teach the gospel. I might be going to the book of Acts next. I'm just going to teach the book of Acts. So you have to give a little bit of space for that when it comes to what they're talking about and when they're talking about it. My question was this, very practical. Bobby, Richard, do you guys do the little plastic COVID communion thingy still, or do you guys, you know, serve it? Like, is it in, like, you know, the little wafers? You know what I'm talking about? The little tear off the lid COVID ones. Are you guys still doing those?
The little plastic cup with the lid.
That's lid. Yeah. We're still doing those. Yeah.
Yeah.
Driving yourself nuts when you go to do it, to peel the first layer off.
Yes. The second layer, that's the one that always gets me. And, you know,
it's hard with a microphone, too. And you're holding a mic and you're like, oh, one handing this is hard. Bobby, what do you guys do?
Yeah, we use those things and I don't like them at all. But I definitely don't like the idea of sharing, you know, one big loaf of bread with a bunch of hands touching it, because this is where my OCD kicks in. And I certainly don't want to share a chalice where, you know, we wipe it and then do the mouth. I don't even share a milkshake with my wife, for crying out loud. So the thought of,
for what reason,
with well, it's milky, you know, I don't like her eating my ice cream. I'm pretty to myself on the way I digest my cream products. There's not a lot of sharing that goes in on that. But I would. Like
I just
to
thought it was because you were selfish, but I would.
Excuse me.
Well, that there is. Hey,
that's the underlying reason.
That's right. Underlying is I want all the ice cream to myself.
There you go. That's all we need.
That's true, bro.
Yes. Thanks for being open and honest.
Nothing
Bobby.
Like. Yeah, of course. Yeah, but you know. On this whole calendar thing too, you know, I taught through Revelation about a year ago, and it's almost like you consign yourself to tribulation when you teach through it, because it was like every week it felt like, all right, well, we're talking about judgment again. And you know, I just remember just being worn down thinking, I got a new one for you this week. God's it's getting more intense this week. We're shifting from, you know, the seals, and now we're going to the bowls, and it is a tough series to preach through. And so I get your sentiment of like, hey, we might not be back there for a while, but you can go online and listen. I do wonder sometimes about a church calendar, that if that can be helpful. I'm thinking about incorporating that or trying it for a year. I don't know if you guys have done that, where you take maybe some of the church history calendar and maybe even some of the Jewish calendar, and then look for like 5-minute teaching spots on Sunday, just to kind of acclimate people to the bigger picture that we find ourselves in.
That's a good idea. Very good.
That is a good idea.
Yep.
I've never done anything like that, but it's a great idea, Bobby. Sorry, Brian, didn't mean to.
No, that's fine. I was just going to thank Tiffany for sending in her question on Facebook Messenger. Now, before I go to the phones at 888-564-6173, Regina sent in a question on Facebook that's somewhat similar to what we were just discussing when it comes to, you know, what you see going on at your church. But Regina writes, can you explain to me about Calvin predestination? I will soon retire from working and want to get established in a church within walking distance of my home. The Reformed Church of America appeals to me, but I don't know if I can or should attend a Christian church that I don't completely agree with their beliefs. They are friendly, multi-generational, active. I feel very welcome, but I don't understand their Calvinistic belief on predestination. So, Bobby, should she walk a little bit further? She's looking for a church within walking distance. Should she find something a little bit further away from home that's not a Calvinist church? What would you say?
That's really hard for me, because, I mean, there's a lot of great Christians that are Calvinists. And I think back to when I was a Calvinist for, you know, most of my, well, probably about half of my Christian life now. And, you know, I've genuinely loved the Lord and believed in sound theology. And I feel like that would have been the piece that some people would have struggled with. But all the other points, there would have been great alignment. So I wouldn't want to say that, because I would feel like if I was saying to leave a church that preaches Calvinism, then I feel like I would be basically saying, well, leave the Presbyterian church if you're in the Presbyterian church. And leave any other church that's Reformed. And I would never want to say that. I think that that is a rich theological tradition. It's been a part of the church for a long time, and there's many great Christian believers there. And I think that even in their intent on teaching this, they mean to magnify God. It's God is sovereign. They just want to give God all the glory. And so that's the heartbeat on that. I think that they're over-defining sovereignty. That's how I've ended up landing. And I don't think that, there's a lot I talk about as it relates to this. And if the conversation wants to go there, we can talk about that. But I do feel like, you know, the church is broad, and there's going to be end time issues where we differ. There's going to be salvation issues where we differ, as far as like on election and what that looks like. There's creation issues that we're going to differ on, and how old the universe is. So I think that if we're gracious with each other and just remember that there's a lot of details around the big picture that we get wrapped up around, and let's just stay one as a church. And so, yes, if you like it, there's good community there. If you're enjoying the word, great. You don't have to agree with every single point in a church. I don't even agree with everything that goes on in churches that I've started. I mean, it's like, because my mind changes on things. Like, I bet there's most pastors, if they're honest, if they've been in their church a long time, the church has kind of grown to a place where, like, yeah, I don't even agree with everything going on at the church anymore. Or, man, if I could go back and start this over, it'd look like this. So we're work in progress.
Phil Metzger, would you agree with what Bobby just said?
I totally agree. I think most of us don't agree with ourselves from 5 years ago. So why would I be against, and I think too, you know, and I say this a lot on the show, but I think it's important. It's for this audience. That is that the church is a lot more than just what you get from it. It's also how you invest into it. It's a part of your community. So the very fact that this person wants to walk to church tells me they want to be in something that's within their community. If that's the case, then don't look at the church as just, I perfectly agree. You know, the joke is, if you totally agree, don't go there because you'll ruin it. And that's the truth for, and just for all of us. Nobody totally agrees, especially, and I want to hit on what Bobby shared there, especially on a very rich theological position. I don't hold to the Calvinistic approach, but I respect it, and I respect those people. I can't speak to this church that you're talking about. There are lousy Calvinistic churches and amazing ones. There's lousy this, there's lousy that. There's every range of type of church. I would suggest if you're able to walk there, go check it out. You're going to know. Ask God to show you. You know, they believe in a sovereign God. Let a sovereign God show you if you should be there. I'm not even being facetious. No joke intended. And see how you could be a part of that church. Now, if that doesn't fit, if you're like, gosh, I don't feel like this is where I'm supposed to invest and be, then you know, maybe buy an e-bike and go a little bit further outside of the walking area. And that's okay too. But I would give them a shot before feeling the need to take off.
Just don't ride that e-bike like a maniac like they do here in Southern California. My goodness.
Right.
Richard.
Yeah, I just want to, I kind of want to reemphasize what you just said, Phil, about you cannot agree, but you should respect them. But I think being a part of a local community has to include respect, but it also has to feel like there's a general sense of, like, I fit here and I'm going to be comfortable here. So that'd be my take.
Regina, thanks for sending in your question on Facebook Messenger. And now we're going to go to the phones and we'll kind of continue this conversation with Stephen in Yucaipa, who's wondering, well, what about Lutherans? Can we hang out with them? Can we talk to them? Stephen, what's your question?
Yeah, hi. I'll make this quick. So I've been a follower of Christ for about 10 years now. I attend and serve on staff at a Calvary Chapel. My wife and I got married last year. She was raised Lutheran. About 5 years ago, she got saved and dedicated her life to Christ, eventually leaving the Lutheran church. Her family, on the other hand, are very devout Lutherans. And as of recently, the doctrinal differences between, you call it, evangelicals and Lutherans have been brought more and more into the light, specifically with things like infant baptism, communion, otherwise known as the sacraments. And this has particularly been brought up because we're expecting our first kid in September.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any biblical evidence personally of infant baptism or even consubstantiation. However, the Lutherans seem to hold those in very high regard. Even though I don't hold them at the same level, I deeply respect it. So anyways, as a result, her family, specifically my wife's sister and her husband, want to actually have a conversation with my wife and I tonight about what we believe at Calvary Chapel, or more specifically as evangelical Christians. So I have a fairly good idea of what I want to talk about and what scriptures I want to bring them to, but I want to hear kind of your guys' thoughts on what topics or scriptures you would bring to their attention, or what you would find valuable to discuss.
Okay. Phil Metzger, let's begin with you.
Well, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling in on this one. And, you know, I think most important, let me just start with kind of like how you navigate those things, especially if I understood this is the first kid, the first grandbaby for you guys. You know, there needs to be like good, healthy boundaries of like, hey, we respect you as the, you know, grandparents to be, and we respect your views, but this is where we're at. And none of the ones, I mean, I think especially when it comes to baptism, while, you know, again, like we just had a baptism here at our church, and we believe here, and I know you already know this, but I'll just say this for the audience, our particular expression of faith is that we baptize those who have been able to consciously put their faith in Jesus. In other words, we will pray for littles, we will pray for babies, we'll pray for kids, but in terms of baptizing them, I will baptize kids, but they need to have been able to make a decision. So I'll usually ask questions, you know, do you understand what you're doing? Do you believe in Jesus? What, you know, to walk me through your salvation. And I think those are issues that you'll be able to talk with your in-laws about. My hope and prayer is that they love you, you love them enough to where you can have, you guys can navigate the conversations and even the issues without it having to be something that splits you. But in terms of scriptures, you know, I always think, you know, just even for me, things like Mark 16, where he says about being baptized. But, you know, when you get into kid baptism, I would wonder, Stephen, I think your name was Stephen, right? Yeah, Stephen. I think it might be fascinating for you to be able to ask them, explain to me where you believe this from. Not from a challenging, like, I'm against you, but if you want a chance to get to learn, this would be your best option. A lot of amazing Lutheran believers, they love Jesus. We're all, in a sense, thankful for the Lutheran movement from different moments in history. In terms of baptism, I believe that it is something that a mature person who's put their faith in Jesus does. In terms of communion, again, we would take a more symbolic approach, that it is representative. It doesn't become anything else, but it represents the blood and body of Jesus Christ for us. So I think the opportunity is that you get to expand your own heart and mind and learn from your in-laws in things that maybe you wouldn't have even been thinking about before. So good luck in those conversations.
Now, what's something that might get brought up at this conversation tonight? What if they come up with a Bible verse or something and they say, well, see, it says here. I mean, how can you refute that? How would you be able to counter whatever it is that they might bring up?
Well, I would start with the issues we're talking about. I mean, I'm focusing on baptism more than I am communion. But these are, you know, again, unless it's a part of a tradition that says, no, baptism is absolutely necessary for salvation, now we get into some tricky things. But they're not going to have a verse that they could clearly point to. Mm. Again, a lot of people like to go to Mark 16 on that. But it's very clear there that you must be born again and repent of your sins, but it does not say you must be baptized. So when you get into secondary issues, we're all going to have a Bible verse. Let me be clear on this. On all these issues, there's a lot of secondary issues. When I say secondary, I mean it's not a salvation issue. It's not the difference between whether a person is born again or not. It might be, you know, I'll use an example we talk a lot about here on Pastor's Perspective. Maybe Bobby holds a different view of end times than maybe I do. That's a secondary issue. It has nothing to do with our salvation. We would never let it divide us. We will very jovially speak about it. We'll laugh. We'll have a great conversation. Bobby's going to have Bible verses that very clearly express his position. And then I believe I'm going to have Bible verses that also clearly express my position. And we're both going to say, gosh, there's some room and some space in the scriptures where we just don't fully know. That's why it's a secondary issue. And because of that, I'm going to respect the fact that he's researched, he's considered, he's approaching that with a really God-honoring way. And hopefully I would do the same. So with your parents, baptism is one of those things. Oh, no, here's a Bible verse. What am I supposed to do with that? Oh, no. Well, it's a secondary issue. So you're going to have a Bible verse that shows your perspective. And then you're just going to both agree. We both are at least convinced of our perspective from the scripture, but we are okay with other people's views. We're not going to split or divide over this.
But when Bobby starts bringing up his views about the flat earth, then that's when you might, you know.
Right. Well, then we have a different, now this becomes a real problem for us. And that's when you usually have to go to commercial as quick as possible.
Yes, yes. And joking, yeah. By the way, Bobby is not a flat earther. Yeah. At least might be now he is. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm not a flat earther, you know, but sometimes on these conversations, you know, you got to step back a little bit too. And, you know, Stephen, just picture the Lord, because sometimes we get so focused on like being doctrinally, you know, right. And that's good. Like we want to be orthodox and I get that. I mean, I'm a Christian apologist. At the same token, you know, you picture the Lord looking down and just being like, I don't think he's having a panic attack if one person thinks that he's present amongst them in a special way. Another person thinks this is a more like, oh my goodness, you missed the interpretation. Like, how did you butcher that? Or, you know, somebody goes and they're getting baptized. You picture like the person's genuinely going before the Lord and the Lutheran church, and they're just so excited to be baptized, and water is sprinkled on them, and they just are so thankful for their salvation and the gospel. But the Lord's looking, going, man, you did not get deep enough into the water here. This is just crazy, right? Like, so where I go, I believe in immersion, and I think that we do, but I think the Lord can weed through on some of this stuff and see the sincerity of people's hearts. Because a lot of times when I've talked to people, I had a guy who was Lutheran, and he was baptized, but by sprinkling. And over time, I talked with him and discipled him, and I ended up baptizing him. And it was a really special moment. But the way he grew up and the way he saw it, like, it was just so important to him, and it took time. And I looked at his heart and I thought, you know what, this guy, I mean, it was really special to him what took place. And I think that the Lord knows that when something seems special to somebody, and they had a moment with the Lord, they just want to make sure that they're being right when they consider something another way. And I think that we can be patient with each other on that.
Richard Tamino.
Yeah. And, you know, I think maybe one question that I think gets to, is this a closed hand issue, or is it an open handed issue? Is it a primary matter of faith, or is it a secondary thing? I think it's the question of baptismal regeneration becomes something that would be, you know, if they're saying, no, we actually believe that if very fact that a person is baptized, regardless of age, that's the act of baptism is the moment of regeneration merely by being baptized. I know, like, that's a big deal in Catholicism, like the infant's baptism is a really important mm-hmm. bit about he is now full-blown member of the Catholic Church, and that's their security, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's just one thing, but I do really think, like, man, when you're having a conversations with people, relatives or not, who their denomination doesn't hold the same views, I would always just say, try to keep everything to Jesus, and find your fellowship in that. You know, having come out of Catholicism, man, my wife and I still had ties back into the Catholic Church with a lot of people, and we didn't want to sit and talk about the rosary with them. We didn't want to talk about the saints. We just wanted to talk about Jesus with them. And you can't miss the mark with that. And there are Jesus-loving people in some of those churches that you would not go, that's not our Calvary thing. And I would really lean hard in just to lean into Jesus.
Bobby Conway.
Yeah, good word, guys. I feel bad sometimes because I look at the questions that populate, and, you know, it's just some of the things, and I'm not saying this with Stephen, just in general, like, you know, the fears that Christians often live with, and depending upon maybe which denomination they end up with, they just get overwhelmed, or they go through life just, you know, in Roman Catholicism, like the amount of guilt that people can just end up wearing, and what they feel like they got to do, and you know, and we see questions come up, you know, constantly about, you know, blasphemy of the Holy Spirit, and just some of the things that just really can freak people out and mess up their mental health, to be honest. And so you realize the stewardship of teaching God's word and doing our best to be tender with people's souls and helping them to understand that God is a loving and a gracious God, and he cares deeply about us, and then trying to figure out how to share what it looks like that he's also just, and he expects us to be responsible in the word. But, you know, you become a new Christian and you hand somebody a Bible and say, okay, you're responsible for, you know, 198 chapters of the Bible and all the doctrines entailed, and you need to just get this thing figured out. And if you mess up on one piece of this, you know, God's angry. And I think that can be a scary place to live for people, that especially if you're untrained in how to handle the text. So God be merciful to us as we all try to just honor him and work our way through some of the difficult issues that we face as Christians.
Thank you for calling us today, Stephen. We're going to take a little break, and then we'll be back with more of your questions. The phone number is 888-564-6173. Answering your questions today, we've got Bobby Conway, Phil Metzger, and Richard Cimino. Richard is sitting in for Pastor Brian Broderson, who is out celebrating his wife's birthday today and possibly sharing a milkshake. You think they might share a milkshake? I don't know. I don't think Brian's selfish that way. He probably would share a milkshake. Okay, we'll be right back on Pastor's Perspective, 888-564-6173. Pastor's Perspective continues. Hello, I'm Brian Perez, and we are here for about another 25 minutes to answer your questions at 888-564-6173. Won't you give us a call? We'd love to chat with you, 888-564-6173. Answering those questions of yours today, Bobby Conway, Phil Metzger, and Richard Cimino, 888-564-6173. Let's talk to Mike, who's calling us from the city of Torrance of Living Water. Welcome, Mike, to Pastor's Perspective.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I got a question. My question is this. Throughout my Christian life, I notice how Christians seem to pick and choose Old Testament scriptures that they like, and they try to apply it to you, but there's no consistency in how they seem to pick and choose the Old Testament, which part applies to us, which part doesn't apply to us. So in a nutshell, that's my question, is the Old Testament verses, how do we decide, okay, this applies to us today, mm-hmm. and does not?
Yeah. Bobby Conway, we'll start with you on this one.
Yeah, good question, Mike. So there's some differences of opinion as it relates to this approach, but I'll share with you the way that I try to tackle this, and it would be to understand that, you know, in the Old Testament, there was a season where obviously Israel was under a theocracy. And so this means that as a theocratic nation, it had certain rules, laws, and regulations that applied to Israel as, you know, kind of a state religion, so to speak, as Yahweh with its leader. And then we know that they ended up wanting to be like the other nations and then have a king over them. And so then they kind of went into a monarchy. So you shift from a patriarchy, society. Then God calls out Abram, and then this patriarch, would be a part of following the Lord. And then with Moses, we kind of shift into a theocracy. And then out of a theocracy, we would go into a monarchy. And then the monarchy would end up falling. And then all along, there's this promise of a coming Messiah that we meet in the person of Jesus in the New Testament. Well, when Jesus comes on the scene in the fullness of time, he enters into the Greco-Roman world, and Rome's in power at that time. And so then you can see through some of Paul's writings of what it looks like to be in relationship to the emperor as a believer. And so now you step back and you go, man, with all this stuff going on and with some captivity, and you can even see the way Daniel and his crew operated, or Jeremiah in Babylon, what does that look like? And so I think when it comes to the laws, I like thinking of the fact that there were ceremonial, or ritual laws. There were dietary laws, civil laws, and then the moral law. And so when it comes to things like the civil law, the dietary law, those are more confined to what it looked like to be under the old covenant with the sacrificial system. And then the civil laws, what it looked like just with their discussions on how to treat the aliens, all poverty, what all that looked like. So obviously, those laws, when they went into exile, for example, the ritualistic, the ceremonial laws, those didn't apply because they didn't have access to the temple during their exile in Babylon. So they couldn't have applied some of the same sacrificial stuff that was going on at the temple. And they grieved that. What they did try to hold on to was some of the dietary stuff. You could see Daniel even requesting to have a certain diet. So he's away in exile, and so he's kind of looking at it like that. So I think what you see is you have the theocracy with these, you know, sacrificial laws that are in place that are ritualistic, and they're pointing toward the Messiah, but that kind of falls off when there's no temple, and then they're kind of holding on to the dietary laws. And then once they can get the temple back in place, they pick back up these ritualistic laws. And then when Jesus comes on the scene, it's the moral law, it's the ceremonial law. You don't have really the civil law because they're not under a theocracy, but they do have the temple. They do got some of the dietary stuff. And so then the temple's destroyed eventually, right? So we know that brings it into it. But then even the temple is torn when Jesus says to Tetelestai, it is finished. So there's no longer a need to shed the animal's blood. We shed it through Jesus is the blood shed once and for all. So that fulfills sort of what the Old Testament was trying to do under a theocratic nation and through the ritualistic stuff in the temple. But then the dietary stuff, we see that Jesus settles that in Acts chapter 10 with Peter, don't call unclean what I've already called clean. So that's kind of addressed. So really what you're left with then is, if you're not a theocracy, is the moral law. Well, then how do you arbitrate which moral laws carry over? Because some of these laws might be more than just, you know, like some of these ritualistic things might also be a moral piece. And that can get difficult. But typically we'll say that what's repeated in the New Testament, the Sabbath is debated, but the other nine commandments are all repeated in the New Testament, and we get other laws. And so we look and we try to live those out. But ultimately, Jesus helps us to understand the motivation, and that's the royal law, which is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And when we focus on loving God, loving people, then it seems to be that that will help us to live the moral life that God would call us to live. But Jesus is now the moral exemplar that we follow.
Richard Tamino.
No, I think that just the distinction between dietary laws or social things, don't use two different kinds of fabrics together and all those things. The heart of all those things was distinction. God wanted a people for himself. They were going to be a contrast community. And those were those things. But then there's the moral law that you hit on, Bobby, and that carries over. Like, a lot of people will make the argument, well, really? So the laws against homosexuality, they're right next to the laws about not eating shellfish. So, you know, what's the problem here? We can eat shellfish now. So what's the deal with surely homosexuality is as lawful now as eating shrimp was, you know, can be. No, one is moral and one is dietary. They're not even in the same category. Mm-hmm. And so we're not picking and choosing. We're being very clear. And so,
yeah, Bobby.
I think the one thing is, too, is the moral law would be the one thing that predates even, you know, kind of the Torah in the sense of being revealed. The moral law is written on our heart. The Torah would be revealed in time. It is interesting, though, because in a fallen world, you can see how hard it is for us to discern and navigate on the moral law without revelation alone. Because you think, like, Abram is called out of Ur of the Chaldeans, and it's a polygamous and it's a child sacrificing and idolatrous culture. And yet the moral law is written on their hearts. And so we have to assume that they're just totally numbing themselves out to the moral law, just as the people did with the sons of God and the daughters of men. You know, you start numbing yourself out to that. And that's one of the dangers. Boy, how quickly that moral law that's written on our heart, we can really wash that out as an instrument really quick by numbing ourselves to what God has in store for us. And then that just blurs things. And then we start erecting laws that are totally contrary to what God intends.
I'm wearing corduroy and denim right now, so I'm okay, right? It's two different fabrics.
You would have been stoned.
Yeah.
Yeah, take you outside right now.
Mike, thank you for your phone call today on Pastor's Perspective. Now, earlier today on the Back to Basics radio program, Pastor Brian Broderson was talking about Old Testament laws and things like that. So you might want to listen to that message. Maybe that's why you're calling. Maybe you heard it this morning or this afternoon. And that message is coming up again later today on our flagship station, K-Wave, at 5:30 p.m. and on our sister station, KSTW, at 4:30. Not sure what time Equip FM carries it, but you can check their websites and find out. And Pam is calling in specifically with a question about this, too, because she heard that message earlier today. And Pastor Brian Broderson was teaching through Malachi, specifically teaching on tithing. What was your question, Pam?
I never how he presented it. It was back from the time of, let me think here, Acts and on, that Paul and never mentioned the fact that there was tithing. I think it was Paul, but anyway. So from Acts on, there's no regulation that you have to, 10%.
Yeah.
You do whatever your heart tells you. I like that. That gives me such
freedom.
Yes, it does. Oh, good. So did the other pastors there, do they agree with that?
What would you say, Richard Cimino?
I would say there isn't any reference to tithing, you know, except Jesus does say you tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and these you should do, except but you've left out the weightier matters of the law, right? Mm-hmm. And but once we get into really kind of the structure of the church in the New Testament, there's no reference to it. So
yeah, Phil.
Yeah, let me just remind you of what with the conversation we were just having about Old Testament law, civil society. Remember, the word tithe means tenth. So they were to, as a part of a society, they were tenthing a part of their income in order to take care of the rest of society. So this was helping with the Levites. This was helping with so much of society. When we get to the New Testament, we're no longer, you know, the gospel of Jesus Christ is no longer held or constrained by an ethnicity or one particular group of people. Now we're crossing all boundaries, all lines. It's everywhere. Anybody who puts their faith in Jesus is born again. So now tithe is no longer the civic duty of a group of people who live in community. But the Bible doesn't say just that you don't have to. What instead it says is that we now get to. We get to be a part of connecting into the heart of God for the world through our generosity. So that's why you read things like be a cheerful giver, be generous, things like that. So it's so true, and I think we all agree with what Brian shared there in that teaching, that the mandate does not exist. The opportunity creates in us this not just freedom, but actual joy to get to be a part of the work of God all over the world. It might not just be for my one place, but all over the world through what I had this job that God helped me give. I was able to do this by God's gracious hand, and I get to show him respect and love by giving back to him. So it's no longer the restriction of it's got to be a tenth. I'm now free to do it as much as God shows me and leads me to do.
And that message you can also hear on Brian's website, backtobasicsradio.com. Now, Bobby Conway, let me ask you, what is the definition of a cheerful giver or an uncheerful giver? How do we know if we're doing it right? What would you say?
For the word cheerful, it actually just means a hilarious giver. I mean, you're just so delighted to give. You're just laughing at the joy that it brings you to give. You know, so the person that is not a cheerful giver, obviously they're reluctant. They want to hold on to it. They squander. They're not generous, and that's problematic. I think I actually have mixed feelings about this, if I'm being honest, guys. When I see 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, and I taught through that book, I see that as a special offering that's taken up for the Jerusalem church. And so I tend to think of it in terms of, it's very hard for me to imagine that at the moment Jesus died, the church would have been like, okay, well, we don't have to tithe anymore. We can just do what we want. Because where I get the whole cheerful giver, and each should determine in their heart what they give, You tell most people that, and they're usually relieved because they can now cheerfully give 2% instead of having to worry about giving 10%. Most people, if they don't have a starting place, that's what they're going to be cheerful about. It's not about like more money for me, not more money for the kingdom. And so, like, as Randy Alcorn said, you know, even as it comes to our raises, God doesn't give us raises to always increase our standard of living, but to also increase our standard of giving. Yep. But it can be challenging, I think. And so for me, where I feel torn is I know that it's not like Jesus celebrates the person who, the widow's mite, or the woman with the alabaster jar. It's like the people that just pour it all out. Like, I mean, the people in Macedonia, they were in total poverty and they were begging for the opportunity to give, and they gave beyond their means. I don't know what that means, but I'm going, man, that's not the way I'm giving like them. I'm typically thinking about how I can hold on to a good bit for myself. And, you know, I'm fortunate that I got in a habit though of giving a full tithe as an early Christian. And I'm thankful that I did, because I have found it gets harder to increase that even with raises, because my desires and, you know, I want to travel, I want to do these different things. And it can be really, really challenging to keep increasing that. So all that to say, I don't know exactly where I land on that. Because when I think of the early church, it seems like it's just hard to imagine. Okay, the gospel's been enacted. Now the tithe is gone. I don't know if that's what it would have felt and looked like in that culture. Hmm. I just think it was like the tithe, that discipline would have been so necessary for missional churches to get started. So you're starting these churches, and then it seemed like they were taking up these special offerings on top of that for other churches. So I almost picture the way that giving was working was way beyond a tithe. It was like that's how the church was blown up in that early culture. They were given a tithe. They were selling what they had. They were doing whatever to keep the gospel advancing. So I worry that sometimes out here in the 21st century in America that we might be letting people off the hook, and I don't want to like be a law guy or anything, but as long as people, when they're thinking cheerfully, means, oh, I just get to give and I'm giving hilariously. But I think it could be, I'll give up a Starbucks a month and throw a $5 bill on the plate, and that's my giving. That's a problem.
Right. Yeah. Phil.
Which is what most people are doing. That's the reality. I mean, the statistics are very clear on that. That's exactly what is happening. I think where I'm still kind of curious about it is how many of the early believers who were Jewish, if they stopped tithing to their synagogues and their community, because it was such a part of, you know, community. I'm really curious if it wasn't the non-Jews who really began the practice of tithing within the Christian circle more, and the importance of additional tithing, because for Jews it was like, this is a part of our tax to being Jewish almost. This is what it looks like to be a part of this community. And so if I'm going to give to the mission, I have to do above and beyond. But I was just going to make the joke on cheerful and uncheerful. Here's an uncheerful giver. I want you to see Bobby with a milkshake he has to share. That is an uncheerful giver. And a cheerful giver is when Bobby has two milkshakes that he can share one.
That's right.
That is forever emblazed on my brain now.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Cheerful, not cheerful.
Yes.
Clean and clear, guys.
You know, I think this is interesting in 2 Corinthians. Paul, he's talking about this one community of believers that gave. And he says, I can testify that according to their ability and even beyond their ability, they gave. And they begged us earnestly for the privilege of sharing in the ministry to the saints. So they're begging for the opportunity to give according to their ability and even beyond their ability. And I think that same word comes up again. I just, ability, Like, what is the ability? And Bobby, like when you were talking about, you were referencing that one author who was saying, you know, if God gives you a raise, it's to increase your ability to give. And I think we want to look at the way God is providing for us and see what ability has God given to me to give, with holding into our hearts, Acts 2:42, and the whole of where they held all things in common there later on in chapter 2. And if somebody had a need, people would like, I'll sell this so you can have what you need. So I think the gospel elevates the concept beyond an amount, but then it's up to us to live in that domain. So,
Bobby Conway.
Mm. Yeah, and the other thing that I do struggle with, and I talked to the church the other day about this, and I don't talk about money a whole lot. In fact, my wife will say, "Hun, you need to talk about this more because it is biblical." But I just don't want to be that guy. I don't want people to feel like I'm trying to muster them up to, you know, for my sake, because I know that that can look that way. But for me, I mean, tithing, a full tithe was a part of my discipline before I was even in the ministry, and it's remained that way. And in even seasons where we're able to do more. But I would say the thing that I can feel sometimes is the people's approach to this too. I do struggle with the mindset of, well, once I get out of debt, I'll start giving.
Mm.
So it's like, oh, I'll pay off my debts to my creditors, but I'll go in debt to God, right? Like, it's kind of like that. There's this sense of like, that doesn't make sense to me. I think that's a spiritual thing as well. Like, where our priorities, like we're, if, so I was just trying to encourage people to like start somewhere, like where you can, I mean, cause to me, honestly, I don't really care about the 10% number. I mean, I don't come down on that hard myself. I'm just saying my thoughts on what I wonder about. But if you can't be cheerful on it, then try to find a place you can at least be cheerful and start there. And maybe it's like, maybe I should ask myself, if I'm not cheerful because I can't give this percentage, I should be asking myself why. Like, there's a number I could think of that I'm not cheerful about giving, right? I mean, so why am I not cheerful? So we should all just be searching like that. And, you know, the Bible teaches us how to spend, how to save, and how to give. And I think that we should be doing all of those, and we shouldn't be making bad financial choices due to irresponsible spending and then not giving as a result of irresponsible giving while we pay off debts, where I think we should at least be trying to say, look, I might be trying to pay off my debts, but I also want to make sure God sees that I'm trying to also give. And that's important, just out of someone's spiritual discipline, to not say, I'm just going to wait 5 years and then I'll get mm-hmm. right in this area.
And then the question comes up, do we tithe on gross or net? But we won't get into that today because there's not enough time.
Yeah.
But we have been talking a lot about the Old Testament and the New Testament. And Tabu in Hemet wants to know, where in the Old Testament should he begin? Should he just start at the beginning with Genesis? Hi, Tabu. Welcome.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
All right. Well, so my question is, I've been walking with the Lord now for about 2.5 years, going on to 3. Pastor Brodison is the one who baptized me at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, about 2.5-3 years ago. So I'm very familiar with the New Testament. I've studied on it. I've meditated on it. So I want to do the same thing with the Old Testament. I'm very familiar with, you know, Moses, the story of Moses, Joseph, Elijah. Those are the three main that I know. But which other ones can I, like, kind of attack and meditate and, you know, just try to, you know, learn some more things, you know, get closer to the Lord while I'm reading. I just wanted to get your guys' perspective on that, you know.
All right, Phil, we'll start with you. 30 seconds.
Sure. First, Tabu, welcome to the faith. So glad that you put your faith in Jesus. That's really awesome. Great testimony here. You have a whole bunch of options. I'm a big believer. Start in Genesis. Doesn't mean you have to go straight through the whole Testament. You can, but I would do Genesis through Deuteronomy. It's one section of the Old Testament. It'll give you a great sense of the beginnings, and you'll just get so much rich foundation from right there. I really recommend it. We have other books that are known as like wisdom books. You have Psalms and Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. That's a whole nother section. And then later on in the Old Testament, we have what we call the prophets, major prophets, minor prophets. That doesn't mean better or worse. It means bigger, longer, or shorter. And you're going to get a whole, just in those three chunks right there, you're going to get a real sense of it. There's one more section, and that would be the Chronicles and the Kings and Samuel looking at the life of the kings of Israel. But I'm a big fan of starting in Genesis through Deuteronomy. Great first section to bite off in the Old Testament.
Richard, 20 seconds. Genesis or not?
Yes, Genesis.
All right. You still have 17, 16, 15
yes,
seconds.
Yes, Genesis.
Okay. Bobby Conway, you can have his remaining 12 seconds and your 20.
I like what Phil had to say. I'd say for me, Chuck Swindoll helped me to have a love for the Old Testament with his biographies that he was writing. Mm. And that can be very helpful. Just read maybe some of his biographies on Joseph, David, Esther, Moses. I think that can be very enriching to your life as well.
Nice. Chuck Swindoll, insight.org is the website for his resources. And we have run out of time on today's Pastor's Perspective. Thank you so much for joining us. If you missed any part of it or just want to hear it again, we'll be archiving on Facebook, YouTube, and Spotify a little bit later. And we will be back live on Friday afternoon. So call us then, especially if you couldn't get through today. On behalf of Bobby Conway, Phil Metzger, and Richard Cimino, I'm Brian Perez. And Pastor's Perspective was sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.
Equipping the saints with sound biblical instruction. This is K-Wave 107.9.